Well, here we are. Once again, it's hard to believe it's been a whole year, but we're back to talk about the exciting event that took place near the Apple campus yesterday. Allison, how you doing with it all?
Oh my God, I'm so excited. Always after an Apple event, it's like the aftermath of Christmas and getting all these wonderful new presents that we haven't even gotten yet.
I know.
Just the anticipation of new products is just, oh my God.
I mean, that really does make it like Christmas when you're a kid, because you might, you know, the presents might appear and they might be wrapped for several weeks and you can't really get to them, you know, but you know they're there, or at least you know something is there.
Right, right.
And Apple is just a master at presenting things that by the time they're done presenting them, you know you want one.
Yes.
They really have that down to a fine art for sure. But of course, as everyone knows by the time you're listening to this, yesterday on September the 9th was a huge event for Apple. It went on for about 2 hours. They attempted to live stream it. Unfortunately, the stream had lots of glitches and problems, and that was pretty frustrating for all of us who were trying desperately to hear what in the world Apple was offering us.
I know. I was trying to stream it on my phone over LTE, possibly at work, and that's really never been a problem. But, oh my God, just between the Chinese language interpreter coming in over the English audio and the dropouts, it was just terrible. I had to actually go back later and I watched it again with the Twit coverage, because they were just ripping it to shreds. So that was funny and sad at the same time, because it's like, come on, Apple, you guys can do so much better than this.
Yeah, I do think that's a definite black mark, a fist shaker against Apple. And I, you know, it was, what was really funny about it was just before Tim Cook took the stage, the stream that was coming on through the Apple TV was beautiful. I mean, it had people, she was showing people filing into the auditorium and had a great camera shots of what was going on. It looked like it was, man, this is a first class streaming event going to take place here. And as soon as Tim Cook took the stage, the stream just went haywire.
It all went to hell in a handbasket.
it really did. But we're not going to let that stop us from telling everyone about the exciting stuff. One thing that was really interesting, unlike Apple events, especially iPhone events in the past, Tim Cook got right to work immediately talking about the new iPhone 6 and the 6 Plus. And he didn't even go into any detail like he normally does about how sales were going or what was going on at the Apple stores or any of the data. He just pretty much jumped right into it. And that was pretty interesting. I think we really are seeing Tim Cook. This is his Apple now.
Yeah, I found that's really interesting. I think that, yeah, we're definitely truly, you know, out from under the shadow of the Steve Jobs era and into the Tim Cook era, where he is all about the wow factor of the products themselves. He, you know, these products that he announced were enough to stand alone on their own without having to wow us beforehand with the salesy part of it, which I always found a little bit tedious. So I was glad to see that go.
Well, I think he kind of either said, or maybe I heard him make a comment to someone later in the day or something, but the idea was, well, everybody already knows that we're doing fine.
So exactly. That's, we hear about that every day.
So there's no need to go into that. But you're right, the products can stand on their own. And I think what I love about the Tim Cook Apple is that Tim Cook is genuinely, I'm convinced, excited about these products.
He
really lives and breathes getting beautiful products out that people will really want to use. And of course, that's to his advantage. He likes selling them too, I'm sure.
Oh, of course. Who wouldn't?
but the point is, he has something worth selling, which he gets excited about.
Exactly. You could hear the emotion in his voice as he was talking about these products. You can tell he really loves them.
So the new iPhones are pretty much what we had expected based on the rumors. There's the 4.7-inch and the 5.5-inch. And so curious what your thoughts are about the two.
Well, I am going to, I think, go for the 5.5-inch, mainly because of the extra battery life, especially with screen curtain on, and the especially as apps like KNFB Reader come out. I really think it's great that they have finally addressed this issue of the larger iPhone gap that is finally going to be filled, because so many people, especially sighted people or low vision people even, have said, I would get an iPhone if it was just a little bit bigger like my Android phone, and now they can. So I think that they've definitely made the right move there. I'm sure the 4.7 is really cool too, and I think size-wise, if it had the exact same specs, I would probably go for it, but seeing as how it doesn't, I will go for the 5.5, which from what I have heard from podcasters who have held it, it really doesn't feel that as big as you might think in terms of width. It's a little bit taller, but it's not a heck of a lot wider. It is wider than the current 5S, but it's not as wide as you would expect a 5.5-inch phone to feel. And I think a lot of that has to do with the curved edges. I think it almost sounds like, from the description, like it's going to feel... The 4.7 and the 5.5 are going to almost feel like a maybe slightly thicker iPod Touch.
The design in many ways is back to a more similar design of what we had in the iPhone 3GS with the curved back. And I believe the back is all metal.
I loved that phone.
Yeah. That was.
I didn't have one, but Jeremy did. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was a nice design. I liked it too. And the other difference, I guess, is that it doesn't have sharp edges anymore like the 5s. You know, their edges are more rounded. And unfortunately, while you were talking about some of that, you did drop out a couple times. And in both times you said, I think that the two features you really liked were the longer battery and image stabilization.
Yes, the optical image stabilization, which enables you to take better pictures in low lighting. I think especially for things like OCR app, like the KNFB Reader app, which will be really soon, I think that's going to be critical for us as blind folks. And also with regards to battery life, it seems like the 5.5 is going to have significantly more battery to work with, especially if you're totally blind and turn screen curtain on like I do, and I'm assuming you do as well most of the time, Robert. I think that's really going to help increase battery life for us.
Yeah, I think you're right. It does seem like it has maybe about a third better battery life overall, which is kind of what one would expect given that there's more space for a bigger battery. It's also driving a lot more pixels on the screen. So it's kind of hard to say exactly how much of a benefit you'll get. And the other thing, both of them are very, very thin.
Yes.
In fact, they're so thin that like the current generation iPod Touch, the camera lens does protrude on the back.
Just a little bit, yeah. Yeah. I never minded that, though, personally. I know some people have problems with that, but that never bothered me. I'm thinking with the bigger model, the 5.5 model, maybe I'll drop it less.
Well, I hope so.
It's my poor 5S. It's I'm glad that I'm going to be able to trade it in and get a new phone with this Verizon Edge program, because it's looking a little sorry right now. I can't lie.
Okay. Yeah, less dropping would be good.
Yeah. Well, when you have a dog, you know.
Oh, I know. It's true because that does kind of make your hands more full. A lot of the time, that's very true. I think for me, honestly, because I have the iPad Air, which I use a lot, and because I really want a phone that will fit comfortably in my pocket, even with pants the pockets are a bit tighter, I think for me, I probably will stay with the 4.7, even though I get what you're saying about some of the, you know, the nice features are the longer battery life and the optical image stabilization. But I also feel like the 4.7 is going to be a really great phone as well.
Well, I think especially because you have an iPad. I was not really wanting, as much as I have enjoyed playing with Jeremy's iPad mini, I really didn't want to spend money on an iPad. So this way I'll get one device. I'll be able to use one device for everything again. That's just kind of how I roll. Until I get a better job, I can't really afford an iPad.
Absolutely. There is a new processor in the new phones, in the 6 and the 6 Plus.
Mm-hmm.
And I that's going to mean more speed and probably more responsiveness in terms of, I'm imagining, voiceover, especially for people who choose to run the new bigger Alex voice.
Yes.
Probably going to work better. I am maybe an exception to the rule for a lot of people, but I've never had a battery problem with my 5S, so I'm not too worried about battery. I'm not sure why that is. I've maybe just been fortunate.
I wouldn't say I've ever had a problem, but I do notice it running down throughout the day, especially if I'm out a lot. If I'm at work, I tend to keep it plugged in. But if I'm using it throughout the day, I know that these are still devices pretty much where you have to charge them, you know, once a day. But
yeah,
it's a little alarming sometimes when you look at your battery and you're like, 18%? What? How did that happen?
Yeah.
You know.
I'm pretty fortunate. My battery is normally, you know, I start unplug my phone usually about 5 o'clock in the morning and usually plug it in to charge it 9 or 10 in the evening. And so after 16 or so hours, I usually am down to around 30%.
That's not bad.
Or sometimes 25, you know, or somewhere in that neighborhood. But I'm pretty happy with that battery life. But for whatever reason, I don't know, I don't have anything turned off. I mean, I don't have all my apps using location services. I don't have all them, you know, always checking to see if there's anything in the background they can download. I'm pretty careful about which ones I have doing some of that stuff. But I don't ever make a real effort to keep everything turned off to save my battery.
I took the Facebook app off my phone, and I find that helped with battery life significantly.
Yeah.
But I do have a lot of things checking my location and the background and everything. I'm a little bit connectivity obsessed. So.
Yeah. Well, you're like me. You use your phone a lot for everything. For
everything, yeah. Yeah.
And that's one of the really exciting things, I think, is that, you know, I love my Mac, and I use it all the time, and I really enjoy my iPad Air. But I would have to say, and I think it's probably true for most people, the real heart of all this is the iPhone.
Yes.
There's just something so special about having a computer of that power that you can carry around like that.
Yeah, having your world of entertainment and information and, you know, connectedness to others literally with you in your pocket anywhere you go.
So the second thing that they talked about after the phone was the fact that they introduced a system for using your phone to pay for things. Apple Pay, I believe they call it.
Yeah, Apple Pay. Can't wait.
iPhone 6 has some hardware to help take advantage of Apple Pay. Apple seems to be introducing for the first time some form of near-field communication,
mm-hmm.
which is going to allow people to just touch the phone to an object that's designed to accept payments, things like that. And this is something that I was a little surprised, honestly, about, because I didn't really think Apple was going to go down the near-field communication route. But that's they didn't call it that, but I believe they've adopted some form of NFC in the new phone.
Yes, it is NFC. And again, I think this really speaks to the blooming, if you will, of the Tim Cook era. I think that in the past, a lot of things just weren't done at Apple because Steve Jobs opposed to them for whatever reasons, be they good or bad. And you don't have a lot of that with Tim Cook and his team. It seems like their primary focus is to surprise and delight. And if it means that they are going to put NFC in a product so that people can use it as a payment system, then if that's going to be something that changes the world, and it's going to be, I think, especially for blind people, then that's what they'll do.
Well, part of the problem with NFC has been that it's been around for a while. It's been in some Android devices, but it hasn't really caught on. The vendors, the stores, the credit card companies haven't really adopted it as a widespread way of payment, especially in the U.S. But with Apple, the muscle of Apple behind that, and all of the devices they sell and all the credit cards they have on file, this may very well be the thing that really pushes this kind of payment system into the forefront, I think.
I agree. Where Apple goes, the rest of the world usually follows in pretty short order. So I really think that this is going to revolutionize the way we pay for things. I think we're going to see it in more and more stores. I think even by the time, you know, the Apple Pay launches with the next iOS incremental update, they were saying next month, I think that even more stores will have come on board. I think within 5 years, it's going to have completely changed the face of how we pay for things.
They said they've already got several larger stores on board, and they've got all three of the major U.S. credit card companies on board.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of banks.
And a lot of banks. And one of the things that they've done to try to really be wise as far as security goes, because they all know that people are going to be worried about the security of their transactions. Well, one of the things that they've done is they have set it up so that when you actually submit a payment, you're not actually submitting your credit card number over the payment system. What actually happens is the system contacts the credit card company or your bank, depending on how you have things set up, and a one-time code just for that purchase is generated. So when that happens, there's no danger of anybody intercepting or tampering with it, because the code is only useful for that one purchase. And your credit card isn't even stored on your phone. So that combined with the fact that you're going to be able to use Touch ID to validate and verify purchases, I think they've really thought through this whole security issue. And that's got to be more secure than the way we do it now, where we're in the restaurant, the waitress takes your card and goes somewhere off in the back, and you don't know what's going on with it.
Yeah, it's going to really make things more secure.
It's going to be interesting to see how quickly people do or don't adopt this kind of system, because it's changed for people. Problem is, the one we got now is pretty much broken.
Right. And I think the world at large is kind of fed up, and the U.S. especially is fed up with having their credit card stolen, having their identity stolen, having to go through all this rigmarole just to make purchases, and really putting themselves at risk almost every time they get out that piece of plastic. I think being able to take away that hassle, and especially the retailers too. I mean, I'm sure that Target is wanting to do everything they can to make sure that another breach does not occur. I would not be surprised if they were adopting the system in very short order following the release of Apple Pay.
Absolutely. And the other thing about it, you alluded to it briefly, I think, but it's going to be for the first time ever for those of us who are blind to have a fully accessible transaction system. I mean,
yes.
It's always been a pain to have to try to sign credit card receipts and do those things and get back receipts that we couldn't read. You know, I mean, this does change a lot of that.
And I mean, God forbid you have to use debit for whatever reason, and you're trying to enter your PIN. Sometimes they have a touchscreen device. Sometimes they do have a keypad. But then I work in an area that's a little bit sketchy. And in the convenience store, I'm always worried that somebody is going to be looking over my shoulder trying to read my PIN. Sure. So I just always try to pay with cash. And that's a pain, too. So, you know.
Yeah, because you have to get that cash out of the ATM or keep cash somehow.
Yeah.
So I think that's really going to change a lot of the way that we do our transactions. And it seems like, as is typical with Apple, they've really thought it through and are going to get this started off right. So we'll see how that goes in the next few months.
That's going to be cool. Yeah, they wouldn't have gotten into this platform if they weren't going to do it right.
Well, I guess now we can move on and discuss the third major announcement after we got through the iPhone 6 and Apple Pay. They moved on to the wearable, which had been so talked about and so rumored, and it was almost to the point of, if they didn't announce it yesterday, I think the world would have been hugely disappointed.
Yeah.
But it turns out that the wearable, as most people probably know by now, is called Apple Watch, and it is a device that you wear on your wrist that is pretty much the size and dimensions of a watch, although I understand it's square shaped. But they do really seem to be thinking carefully about everything, from not only what this device will do, but what it will look like on people's wrists. They have it in two different sizes, and within those two sizes, there are three different models. So there are lots of watches to choose from.
I'm excited about this. I have not heard anything with regards to accessibility of this new watch OS they have developed, but I'm hopeful because Apple has not let us down. From 2009 on, they've been right on it in terms of accessibility. So, or 2006 on, really, when you count the Mac, but I'm talking about the mobile space. I think that this will be accessible to us in some way. And I don't know what model I'm going to get. I have to look at it. I have to look at all of them and decide. The gold one sounds really pretty, and the bracelet type band. I'm sure it's going to cost a fortune, but that might be what I end up going with.
Yeah, the base price is all they have announced so far, which is $349.
Yeah.
And we don't know beyond that what the other prices are going to be. And the product isn't actually going to be out until after the first of the year. Obviously, they're still working on it.
Yeah. Early birthday present for me, from me to me.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Yes, exactly right. We don't know yet about what the accessibility situation will be, but they've been very creative in the interface. They have designed a new interface. They didn't just, you know, try to somehow overlay iOS 8 on a watch size screen, which would have been really foolish and no one would have liked it. But they really thought hard about how to make an interface work on a watch. And it's interesting that they use the crown or the stem on the watch to sort of more as a scroll wheel or a way to let people scroll through applications. And they also use the touch screen, and the touch screen can differentiate different pressures of touch to do different things. And so they have really thought through, again, a very creative, a completely new interface that hasn't been used before. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that works.
It's going to be so awesome. And at the center of that crown is also the home button. And then you can do something where you can communicate with your contacts via the watch and send what's called taptic feedback. So you can send little different feelings and nudges. You can send your own heartbeat, your own heartbeat, because it has a sensor that measures your pulse.
Yep.
But you can also send little taps to mean different things. So Jeremy and I are already thinking, hey, what are you want for dinner going to feel like? And, you know, what is I'm getting bored, let's go home going to feel like? And
yeah. That might be a very important one to work out right away. and in addition to that, they talked about how this taptic feedback can be used to give you direction information. So if you're walking down a street running the map, which runs on the watch, and your walking directions are telling you to turn left, you'll get one type of tap on your wrist. And if it's to turn right, you'll get a different type of tapping signal. And I heard Dave Hamilton from the Mac Observer say that when he actually got some hands-on experience with this watch, that it really did literally feel like someone was tapping on his wrist. That it wasn't like a vibration or something that uh-huh. we're used to. It was a different kind of feeling. And he was like really wondering how Apple accomplished that.
That is like cool and almost creepy, but not because yeah. it's awesome. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think some people will think that being able to send your heartbeat to someone is creepy, but it is kind of an interesting idea.
I think it's very, especially like between a husband and wife or something. I think it's very intimate and romantic, and I don't know. Maybe I'm just, I don't know, but I think it's nice.
I guess you can communicate your level of boredom or your level of excitement or whatever, you know, by through sending your heartbeat. So
yeah,
that hasn't quite been done in that way, but clearly it's also going to be used to give you a lot of fitness information. They've got information on three levels of fitness. Level of, you know, if you're just trying to keep track of basically how your steps during the day, or you're just your general activity level, the watch can monitor that for you. Or if you're actually doing some serious exercise, the watch can monitor that and can give you feedback on how you're doing as far as reaching whatever goals you've set and things like that. And then it can monitor other health information. So clearly it's health is going to be at least a significant part of what the Apple Watch has to offer.
Maybe it will motivate me to actually stick to an exercise program now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the things they were talking about, that they feel like that it can be used as a motivator.
Can one of the taptic feedbacks be an electric shock so that when I don't work out, it like will torture me into doing it? That's kind of what I need.
I have to call that shocktic feedback.
Yes.
I guess so. But you know, the thing that to me is a little bit controversial in a sense, and I certainly understand this, why it's this way, but it seems that for the most part, they intend the watch to be used in conjunction with the iPhone. Because for a lot of it, the iPhone is the brains or the data gatherer, but with an iPhone, you can do a lot of things as far as messaging, or I believe you can even deal in some way or other with phone calls. I'm not sure about exactly how all that works yet, but there's a whole lot you can do as long as you also have your phone. It sounds like when you don't have your phone, say if you go running or something just with the watch, that when you get back to the phone, the watch can communicate with the phone and transmit information back that it was collecting while you were out. But in general, it sounds like the intention is that you'll have your phone reasonably close by most of the time.
Right. I'm one of those people who takes my phone with me everywhere. I mean, even when I'm just taking the doggy out, I have my phone in my pocket. So that won't be an issue. Also, this is a 1.0 product. So I'm sure as different iterations of the Apple Watch come out, I'm going to call it iWatch forever, by the way, just because that's what we've been calling it forever. Yeah. But as more iterations of the Apple Watch come out, I'm sure that they will be able to eventually build something, especially as chips get smaller, where the brain is the watch itself.
You think it's likely to move in that direction?
I think it could. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's necessarily likely to be possible for that to happen as new versions continue to come out.
Yeah, you're right. It is a 1.0. So, and the other thing that they did release a developer kit for it. So developers are going to be developing all kinds of apps, and I'm sure lots of them will be home related. I'm sure you're going to be able to control your thermostats and do various things from the watch. We're just seeing the beginning of what's possible, really.
It's going to be so exciting. I can't wait to be able to unlock my door, lock and unlock my door with my watch, because I am forever digging in my purse. Where did I put my keys? And inevitably, they're in the bottom of the purse under all the receipts and tic-tac boxes. And
yeah, exactly. And they've already said that the watch is going to be capable of conducting the Apple Pay system as well.
Yep.
So it's really a new product category, and do you think they've bitten off too much with it? It seems like there were so many things that they were highlighting that it was going to be able to do that this is not typical for Apple in one sense, in that, boy, they normally take their time easing into feature sets and trying to see what works and what doesn't. But with the Apple Watch, it seems like they're offering a whole lot right out of the gate.
Well, for one thing, I think they've been working on this a lot longer than any of us and any of the rumor mill folks could have ever imagined. So I think that what they're going to be giving to us is something that is a product that has been at least within Apple pretty well vetted. So I think that they have made a very calculated move in doing this. And I think that, you know, given that they had been testing it internally for a long time, as I think they have, I think that they have certainly not bitten off more than they can chew. I think that they have bitten off what they can give us. And again, that's going to surprise and delight.
Well, I think in some ways they are, at least some would say, playing catch up in this wearable market, because other companies, although they haven't been particularly successful, have come out with smart watches. But Apple maybe felt like, well, if we're going to do this, we're going to have to do it in a big way that really leapfrogs over where the other competition is at this point. And honestly, I mean, we haven't really, we won't really know for sure until it's out and we have it and we try it and we work with it. But it sure seems like from what we saw yesterday, they have raised the bar with this wearable technology. They have moved it quite a bit ahead of where it was before yesterday, it seems like.
I agree. That's what Apple does. You could theoretically call it playing catch up, I suppose. But what I call it is owning that segment of the market. Apple is famous for going into markets where products are sort of floundering and not really catching on and gaining the traction that they should be, given what they can theoretically do. Apple, even though it looks to the rest of the world like they're playing catch up, they are delivering a product which is so superior that they go in and they forever change the face of whatever that market is. So I guess if folks want to call it playing catch up, it's great, but the joke is ultimately on them, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. You're so right. And that's been a huge part of the makeup of the DNA of Apple. I mean, it's exactly what they did with the music when the iPod came out, mm-hmm. what they did with mobile phones when the iPhone, you know,
yep.
So it's always like this with Apple. They look and mm-hmm. they see what somebody had a good idea here, maybe with a wearable, but nobody really took that to maturity, really brought something out that captured everyone. And that's mm-hmm. that's what they're hoping for here and what they've probably have accomplished.
Yeah.
It is interesting to me that it isn't going to be available for the holiday shopping season. I was kind of joking. I was thinking, you know, boy, they probably just killed the smartwatch market for the holidays, because
yep.
nobody
everybody will be waiting. Yep.
Everybody will wait until it comes out after the first of the year to buy one. And so that's gotta be upsetting for the competition. But I just bet that's how it will go.
I agree. I think that a lot of people are gonna be getting Christmas cards that say, "I owe you an Apple Watch."
So anything else about the Apple Watch that you can think of that you think is important to mention? I think we've covered it pretty well.
Yeah, I think we have. I just really hope we hear something regarding accessibility soon.
It does have the necessary components in terms of, you know, it has a speaker and a microphone, and
yeah,
it looks like there's a good possibility of doing some sort of voiceover accessibility. My problem, though, honestly, with it is I am not a fan of talking watches. And essentially, for us to make use of it, that's kind of what it would have to be.
Well, yes and no, because think about it this way. With the developer kit being released, the Taptic Feedback, in theory, you could have an app on the watch that allows you to make a subtle gesture or even push one of the buttons. You could even map it to one of the buttons somehow, or the scroll wheel, depending on what screen you're on, that could provide the time, almost like the Tyson vibrating watches.
Yes, where it provides you a vibrating signal that lets you know the time.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking, that it would be kind of cool for someone to design.
Yeah, it's a good point.
It would be a good solution for deafblind folks as well as anybody, really.
Yeah, it's a good solution for anybody who wants to be very unobtrusive about checking the time.
Mm-hmm. Even sighted people.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what the Tissot vibrating watch was intended for. Really wasn't a blindness product specifically, but it was intended for people to give people a way to check the time without everybody knowing they were looking at their watch. It didn't really catch on to a huge degree, I don't think. It's probably, you know, a bit too expensive for most people who just wanted that feature. But
yeah,
but if it's something that's just one of the components of the Apple Watch, sure, why not? I hadn't really thought of it, but I bet you're right. I bet someone will develop some applications like that.
Yeah, I think they will.
I mean, that's kind of what's interesting about it right now is just the fact that we're sitting on the very beginning edge of it. We don't really know exactly how it's going to shape up. We don't know what's going to come along with it. And it might even be at this point, you know, we might even see some different options and possibilities when it's actually released than what they had ready to show us yesterday.
True. What a time to be alive, though, eh?
Yeah, what a very exciting time. So then after the Apple Watch was introduced and explained and talked about for really about the last, close to the last 45 minutes to an hour of the presentation, then Tim Cook brought the band U2 out on stage. They played a song and they gave their new album away for free to anyone who has an iTunes account. What did you think of that?
That was so awesome. I love them. They're one of my favorite bands. I love their music and their humanitarian work. And I thought it was so cool because now they have the most biggest selling album in history or something, or I forget what the exact stat was, but they've broken some sort of crazy world record.
Yeah, it's now it immediately with the push of a button became available for more than half a million iTunes users.
Yeah,
which is just
half a billion. You mean
half a billion?
Yeah.
Half a billion iTunes users. Yes. How could I get that wrong?
I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
It feels like to me that's just some of the, in a way, some of the brilliance of Tim Cook to combine something like that at the end of an event that everybody can sink their teeth into. And honestly, it probably will encourage people who don't have one, at least some people, to open up an iTunes account.
Yeah, why not? Get a free album. Start with one, see how you like it, you know?
So I think it was really, to me, it was a very well done, very classy presentation with not just, you know, a fluff in it, but lots of substance to it. And I think there's just a tremendous amount to be excited about here. And I guess traditionally, at this time of year, the thing that's been most exciting about these events has been the phone, and the phones are no slouch, but they weren't the only thing to be excited about from yesterday.
Yeah, Apple has set the stage for not only an exciting, you know, few months as the 6 and 6 Plus get launched and into people's hands. But really, for years to come, I think as Apple Watch and the Watch OS are unveiled and mature.
Yeah, people will be writing about and talking about these things and using these new products for a long time. And we may not be done. We might see more announcements before the end of the year. Who knows?
Right. And oh my God, HomeKit and Yosemite and Handoff. And the world is never going to be the same. And it's all thanks to Apple.
Yeah, it's just an exciting time, as you said. And wow, we're just at the beginning with iOS to be released next Wednesday on the 17th. And the phones are going to be available in the stores on Friday the 19th.
Mm-hmm. I'll be in line.
Yeah, I will too, I imagine. I believe they're going to be available for pre-order starting this coming Friday.
Yeah, as Verizon Edge customers, though, I think we have to go in and trade in the old phones. And I never liked, I always found the pre-ordering process to be kind of clunky, especially with the screen reader on the Verizon site. Perhaps it's gotten better, but I never had great luck getting in, for one thing, because a million people were trying to pre-order at once. I always found that I had better luck just going a little bit early to the store and standing in line and getting my phone.
Well, you know, this time, I think, for me at least, it's especially important to go to the store because I want to hold both the phones and actually make my final decision after I've had the chance to actually get my hands on both of them.
Yep. Now, you know, if you go for the 5.5, I'm going to say, I told you so.
I know you will. I'll never live it down, but I suppose it'll just be a bitter pill I'll have to swallow if that's the decision that I make.
A large pill.
A large pill. One thing we forgot to mention about the phones is they have changed the storage size. Now, they're starting with the 16 gig for the $199 price, at least for the 4.7-inch, and the 5.5-inch phones are $100 more than that. Mm-hmm. But for $299, instead of the 32 gig, you now get the 64 gig. Mm-hmm. And for $399, you get a 128 gig iPhone, which has not been offered before.
Yeah, Allie's going for the 128.
Yeah, I'm going for the 128 also. I did that with the iPad, and I've been really glad that I did. Well, for me, I think that pretty much brings us to the end of what I wanted to highlight from this event. Anything you want to touch on before we bring this to a close?
Nothing else I can think of, but I'm so flipping excited.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it's very exciting. I'll guarantee you, all these things we've mentioned are things we're going to be talking about in the months to come. So stay tuned.
Yeah, we'll be here.
All right, everybody. Take care until next time. This is Robert the Tech Doctor saying so long for now.
And this is Allison Hartley saying bye, everyone.